Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe. And Rebecca, this was a pretty fun week this last week. You got to speak at Q Commons.
Yes.
Which, you know, a global event, tens of thousands of people listening in their own communities, in their homes and living rooms. But just what a way to spread this message. The response has just been awesome. But I know your favorite part.
Malcolm Gladwell. He had me at Outliers. I mean, so many years ago. I remember our boys were so young even then. But the guy does more research than anyone I've ever met. Like, the end notes at the back of his books are almost as long as the book. It's so fascinating. Even his current book, Talking to Strangers, is all about the connect rhythm. Just brilliant on what the insight he has in that book about how we see people and how we don't always can't read people in the way that we think we can.
I know. It's like I've always relied on my gut, and I thought my gut's going to be right like 98% of the time. And he kind of debunks that in this book and in the talk. Just helped us better understand how to think about our neighbors, how to live in a world where we're around a lot more people than maybe we were as human beings, for sure, were 100 years ago or more. And so we're just in some new dynamics. And so connection is more important now than it ever has been.
Right. In our moment, I think sometimes we look at the other person and we want to just project something onto them from our own insecurity. And this is a challenge for that. I think it's good for us to, in a cultural moment where we feel isolated or very polarized, this is an invitation to come back together and focus on this connect rhythm because it is so important for that health.
Now, interestingly, through the quiz where thousands and thousands of people have taken this quiz where they can learn what their healthiest rhythm is, the connect rhythm is the one that keeps coming up as people's highest one. But you hear Malcolm talk and you realize, man, we've got more work to do on that. I do want to remind you, though, if you're curious about what is your healthiest rhythm between rest, restore, connect and create, go to RebeccaLyons.com/quiz. So it's R-E-B-E-K-A-H, Lyons.com/quiz. And you can take that 5 minutes, 40 questions. It'll give you your results and help you know kind of how you can work on the other three that maybe you want to strengthen, because that's the big idea of your book, Rhythms of Renewal.
Right. You need all four rhythms in cadence, not just one. If you're doing so well in one, that means those others are probably struggling a little bit. And we want this. We never have a perfect balance, but you do have rhythm so that if you are resting, you do then need to restore, then connect, then create. So if you see it almost as a cycle each day, making sure that you have a little bit of time for each of those rhythms, that's the holistic picture that we're talking about of health.
Now, I think what's been so fun for you and I about this particular podcast is getting to introduce friends, mentors, people who've helped us in our life these last couple of decades to all of you. And that's going to happen today. We're going to introduce you to somebody who's been a mentor, a coach, a friend over the last two decades for us, helping us think through our life, our structure, how we're living these types of rhythms out. He didn't necessarily call them rhythms at the time, but wanted us to be sure we were thinking well about our physical nourishment, intellectual and relational and spiritual. And so it's fun today to get to introduce you to Pete Richardson, who's the head of the Patterson Center.
We adore Pete. I talk about him in the very beginning of Renewal book. It's the chapter called Take Inventory, where you answer the questions, what's right, what's wrong, what's confused, and what's missing. And he challenged us with these questions years ago, and it's something that keeps coming back again and again and again.
So listen in with Pete Richardson. Well, Pete, it's so great to have you in this conversation with Rebecca and I, because you've been a catalyst in our life over the last 20 years to think about rhythms. And I can't wait for everybody to start to hear a little more about your thinking on rhythms and how all of us can benefit from employing these into our life.
Yeah, thanks. So much journey, right, and story between us. And so I'm delighted to be here and grateful. Thank you.
When's the first time you guys met?
Well, it goes back 20 years ago, JR's for breakfast. I remember one encounter where you pull out a napkin. I'm telling you the dreams God's put in my heart, what I'm feeling would be life purpose, and you're scratching them out quickly on a napkin and helping me start to think through what would actually become a completely new trajectory. for where I was going. And it has set me on that path to understanding life purpose. And for those of you listening, Pete has a process called the life planning process. I know most of us don't feel like we can plan our life, but you get in a setting for 2 or 3 days with a guide like Pete, and he actually helps cultivate and excavate what God's already put in your heart to start to imagine forward. What could this look like? And so I know in my life, Pete, you have just been so formative. God's used you to help me see a future that I've really tried to walk that out. And you do that every day for people. When did you start doing this kind of thing?
I encountered a man named Tom Patterson when I was 29 years old, and he did that to me. So he was in his mid-70s. So he was this sort of Yoda sage and had authored the life plan process. And I had no idea what I was driving to Palm Springs, California to experience. It was a leadership development sort of assignment, and my turn was up. And he did surgery on my soul and excavated clear life meaning and purpose and gave me a pathway for it. So if I remember with you, Gabe, you were kind of in your late 20s, similar to me, and you were in your own sense of turning point. There was this emerging vision for Q and Relevate and everything you're now 15 years into this 30-year vision. It just hadn't had permission, I think, or it hadn't been let out and made visible, but it was all in you.
Yeah, and most of us don't have an experience like that without, like, you had a guide in your life. We intersected, and this became a reality for me. But for those of you who've not experienced it, it's almost like you're in a corporate meeting where normally you'd be talking about the vision of your company, your brand, a strategy for how you're going to accomplish goals. All of a sudden, you're sitting in the center of that conversation, and it's a strategy for your life. And how has God uniquely designed you? What are your talents? What are your burdens? What are the unique things He's called you to do? And it's quite a unique experience. But what I love about it, Pete, is you are uniquely gifted to do this. So I know a lot of people who do this that are good at it. How many life plans have you done now with people?
Yeah, I don't formally keep count, but it's nearing 1,000 life plans over 27 years.
Wow. I remember, Gabe, when you first went out there a couple days and you came back with white paper, and it was almost like the Holy Grail. You had it rolled up and it was like perfectly packaged in your suitcase. And then you get it out and you start taping it around the walls of the room because that's how the process works. All these different lenses and grids that Pete asked you all these questions, and you were so animated in sharing with me how that just turned on these light bulbs for you. And then I'll never forget about a decade later when my youngest is starting kindergarten, we're talking about moving to New York, and you said, for your 35th birthday, I want to send you out to get a calling with Pete. And I just remember we were at Ted's Montana Grill, and I was like, I don't want a calling. I want a piano because I had grown up playing piano. And I think calling for a lot of us feels overwhelming, and we're not even sure where to begin.
I took that really personally. It was like, I was dissed for a piano.
You were, Rebecca, and yeah. Gabe, so he obliged and found me a piano on Craigslist. And the hilarity of it all is that once we got to New York a couple years later, Pete came to visit, and there was a small group of us, about 12 of us, that got to go through this process. So in the end, I got to experience both things. But what you unlocked for us was several things I remember writing in my journal that I just actually reviewed recently, because I think that's the point of this, is to come back to what our heart was saying a decade ago or even longer than that, and just say, where are we in relation to what we imagined or dreamed when we were younger and when we went through this process with you. I remember you talking specifically about PIES, P-I-E-S. Would you unpack that a little bit right here?
Yeah, that's kind of we call it a personal life domain conversation. The theory behind that is that if I have certain practices, or some would call them disciplines or habits, in my personal life, that when I pause long enough to practice those, there's an inflow of energy and life. And out of that pause comes a meaningful expression of my life purpose, comes meaningful engagement towards those I love, comes contributing creativity and productivity in the other areas of my life.
Yeah, so we're calling that rhythms, and rhythms for life. This whole conversation is about these practices and what are the ways in which we can live daily, weekly, in relationship with others, in our own quiet time that helps us flourish. So I would love for you to walk through these four areas, specifically describe them, and then I want us to hear personally how you're practicing your daily rhythms.
Yeah, so PI stands for, it's an acronym, physical for the P, intellectual for the I, E stands for emotional, S for spiritual. And I think most of us understand the physical dynamics. When I pause long enough to appropriately sweat, bring activity to my physical body, there is a regenerative outcome to that, right? I may dread going to the gym on the front end, if that's the expression of it, but when I walk out, there's a sense of refreshment. What have I done? I've literally paused long enough to regenerate my physical being on the cellular level, and that's like scientifically proven. Mm-hmm. When we get into the intellectual, emotional, spiritual, Viktor Frankl talked a lot about these aspects of what do I do to sort of tap in and ground to life's source that gives me life in my interior internal world. So on the intellectual or mental side, there's science behind this. There's a great book called The Power of Full Engagement by Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz, written a number of 10 years ago. They put science behind this, and it was the principle of the sprint and the pause. Hmm. So if I have bursts of sprint and then healthy rest in between sprints, they can refresh me mentally, emotionally, spiritually. So what I read, how I stimulate my mental life, how I cultivate, engage, care for my emotional well, my very human feelings of perhaps anger and impatience and depression and joyfulness, all the mixture of emotions. And then on the spiritual side, it depending on where one is spiritually, in essence, by definition, we say your human spirit is where your beliefs towards the world, your values for life, how I think, live, and relate, and engage and see the world, is where my spiritual life is cultivated. And if that includes personal engagement with God, then that's cultivated. So there's certain practices we can do that may target one of the PIES, or some actually target many.
Right. This is so helpful for all of us, I think, just to have categories. And the way I framed it in the book is rest, restore, connect, create. But it is the same idea of rhythm, that science and faith go together. It was very important for me in this book to have science in every single chapter, because God made our bodies, He knows what we need, and He uses all means necessary to heal us. And renewal means to make new again and again and again. And because God is the author of life, He's a regenerative God. There's a new mercy every morning as we begin a new day. So He's always trying to make us new through these actions of restoration with our bodies and that physical, like you said, you know, a brisk walk for 5 minutes raises serotonin, which is the happy hormone, or a hug for 5 seconds raises dopamine, which is connection, feelings of connection and belonging. So part of it requires us to be active, to move, and to be intentional about doing that regularly so that we are being regenerated every day. And then with that, like you said, this emotional and spiritual, that's what so many of our listeners are navigating right now. They want sustained emotional health. And you, I know, just being your friend for a long time, have had to really be intentional for yourself so that you can have this long obedience in the same direction. We want a sustained life of perseverance that doesn't entail just burnout and then wanting to quit all the things that made our hearts sing a decade ago. And so tell me a little bit about the rhythms that you've put in your own life, just being your friend, watching you walk this out, that has been that replenishment cycle for you. Maybe a decade ago it looked like this, but the last couple of years it's looked like this. Give us a little insight as to what that means for you.
Right. No, that's a good question. It has changed over the years. I'm 57 now, so, you know, but I still need certain on the physical side. There's a great book called Younger Next Year. It's for people over 50 years old, and it's how you can actually rebuild the cellular life as you age. So for me, if I can do 45 minutes four times a week of cardio where I hit 85% of my heart rate, I understand what I'm doing physiologically in my body. And mm-hmm. So whether it's – I've had knee replacements, so I'm limited now, but it's whether it's – my spin bike or biking outside, or Janet, my wife and I, we do hot yoga twice a week, which is really tough. Sounds easier than it is.
Right.
That's tough.
And you live in a beautiful part of the country. Tell people where you live. So yeah, getting outside is awesome.
We live in the Boulder, Colorado area. Right. So we have a lot of trails to get outside and walk. And
you have nature's playground at all times.
Exactly. So that's how I address sort of the physical. But even when I do work out, it's like, how can I stimulate other aspects of my interior world? Audio books, different recordings of people I really value and listen to. So I am by nature just a hardwired introvert. Hmm. So I love my mornings, my early mornings. I was a ranch kid as I grew up. So I typically wake up around 5 a.m., sometimes earlier than that. And those quiet mornings are where I'm in a new season of contemplative meditation. And I've kind of learned that from some of the old world mystics. Mm-hmm. And just, some would call it just meditating.
Right.
And quieting myself to be still and listen. Mm. And that's a very replenishing aspect of what I'm currently doing. I love to write. Some would call that journaling. I like to call it brain drain, skimming the dross off my heart. I learned that from Julia Cameron from The Artist's Way.
Yes.
That's a very important practice for me. I love long walks. If I can get one long walk outside alone a week, typically on a weekend.
So how long is long?
Like hour and a half, 2 hours.
Wow. Gabe and I get walks in, try to do 3 times a week. It's about an hour max, but it is so beautiful to be out in nature and then you do that in solitude, which is awesome.
I've got questions though. Okay. So Rebecca, big on journaling in the morning. I've had a hard time doing that. So help me think through this for my own life, because when I journal, I kind of have this block that anything I write down, somebody else may read. And it actually keeps me from feeling like I can be completely honest with something I'm walking through, something I'm feeling, you know, maybe momentary feeling. But man, you write that down, and in my mind, I'm like, what if my kids read this journal in 20 years? So I know there's something deeper going on there for me that kind of is a block. So how do you think about that?
Well, you might want to tell yourself when you're done writing it, you're going to burn it.
Yeah, yeah.
to free you from that. But the concept of morning pages is freedom to be emotionally, mentally, spiritually, relationally, completely honest with yourself. So you start with exactly where you're at, and it's practicing the discipline of awareness of right where you are internally and externally. So even describing the context you're in, what you're hearing, seeing, feeling, putting that on paper, it can come out as emotional venting. It can come out as creative conversation with yourself. It can come out as ordering your day. It doesn't matter. So when I finish a morning page journal, I tear out any pages I want to keep, and I throw the rest away.
Yeah. Okay. So I can throw some things away. I can burn some things. That gives me some freedom. One other question for you. I think for successful people leading, they're always busy, right? Tons of things going on. We start talking about rhythms. We start talking about 2-hour walks, workouts for 45 minutes, reading books. And I just know where my mind goes sometimes, and I've had to have a coach help me with this, is like, that's not efficient. That's not moving the ball forward. It can feel like you're going backwards because you're not investing every moment into trying to activate and work. And yet my coach said to me, look, if you're leading things and you're not taking time to actually read, to restore your mind, your soul, to think well, then how can you actually lead? And it did logically make sense to me, but I do think that's a bit of a roadblock for some people, is they go, I don't have time to spend 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day replenishing myself physically and mentally and emotionally and journaling in the mornings. I've got kids. Why is it so important? Can you make the case to that person as to why they better do that? Because the cost they're going to pay down the road is so severe that they would want to invest and do this now in their life?
It's called energy management. So when people say, I'm burned out, I'm tired, they don't know why. They haven't been practicing things that put life and energy in, so they're operating on empty. If Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill and Ernest Hemingway, and we could go on and on, if they could practice certain personal pauses and habits and rhythms and disciplines, then that tells me that I can too. I just haven't learned how it's going to work in my own life. It's really not 2 or 3 hours a day if we do the math. It's literally about 10% of 12 hours a day. And if we look at it more in a week than a day, then it's more palatable. It's more realistic and doable.
Right.
It's not oftentimes multi-hour pauses. Sometimes it's 15, 20 minutes. And if we understand the return on investment of taking some of these pauses, we'll be more inclined to do it. We don't miss meals.
Right.
We eat. We may not eat well. We may not eat as rhythmically as we should, but we do eat because we know if we don't eat, there's ramifications to it. When we begin to see the same impact on our intellectual, emotional, spiritual life as we do as nutrition on our physical life or lack of sleep on our physical replenishment, then we're more inclined to say, I must do this. It's not an option. And if I do it, the rate of return on my engagement, productivity when I am in other spaces is worth it.
I found this in my own life. A couple years ago, I would have to travel once a week, usually overnight on a Friday and Saturday, and I would just get through the week. There was not a lot of active life. I would only journal enough to kind of like complain. And so rhythms, I had to really develop that, which ultimately became this book. But what I found, even in the last few months, we've been in an intense season. We adopted a girl. She just started kindergarten. We've got three teenagers. This book just came out. There's a lot going on. But what I have found as a result of these rhythms being priority, even in this season, is I have more joy. So that when I do go and I get in a new city, I have energy for it. Like you said, it is energy management. I used to want to go back to bed at 3 p.m. when the kids were getting home just to take a nap because I was so exhausted. And if we come into our work with that positivity, with that energy, with that desire, then I think the work that we do has exponential reach, because I do think that freedom is contagious and that positivity can be contagious. And so you can't afford not to, especially if you're just managing, like pain management in your work. You're probably not moving the ball as far as you'd like anyways. And so maybe take a pause. That's why God isn't casual about Sabbath. You know, if he's God and he rested and then he blesses that day, he says, indeed, we need to do that too. There's rest precedes blessing. And I'm a firm believer now that you run fueled by a posture of rest, not run to earn rest. And so that's a challenge, I think, for so many of us. Yes, you're right. It doesn't have to be a 2 hour period, but you might have one morning in a 5 day period where you're like, I have a little longer morning that morning and I want to get outside, or I want to just take more time to journal. And so look at your week in advance. That's one thing Gabe and I've had to be very proactive about. Go like, hey, we don't have to be into the office till 10. On this one morning, we're going to leverage that and make sure we're being intentional with a deeper dive of rhythm. I remember you talking specifically about decades, how each decade represents a different kind of person. Would you share that here for the listener who might be at all ages?
Yeah, different cultures historically, even around the world, kind of see life from birth to death in different eras or thematic seasons. And what I shared with you that time was the sort of the Hebrew view of life from birth to death. Mm-hmm. And so the childhood years, there's different words for these years where if mom and dad give us a healthy foundation, these are just where we're free to be a kid.
Right.
And free to grow healthy foundations. So from Hebrew perspective, they're the created in God image years. So mm-hmm. there's this identity by design. And yet we see even in the youngest of our children, this sense of contrary appetites, right? One of the 2-year-old's first word typically is no, you know? So you see that as well in those early years. But Hebrew culture, even today, much of it will celebrate the bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. The passage experience at age 13 from childhood into young adulthood. So you're moving into this next season or era. And in old Hebrew traditional culture, arranged marriages happened at a very young age, age 13, 14, 15, right? So these were the kind of from age, the teen years in our day and age, and even the 20s, that was one whole season in Hebrew thinking.
Right.
And this was the find a bride, create a family, create, right? And yet sort of the dark side of that was healthy and unhealthy expressions of sexuality. But it was a season of life to go create as you have been created. Again, right. Created in God's image as a creative being.
Right.
And then the 30s, cool word for the 30s, it's the Hebrew word is gabor. It translates the warrior years, right? So it's a decade in old Hebrew culture of defending and protecting the borders of literally a nation. In today's culture, think about your life when you were, your point of view when you were 29 versus 39, right? Mm-hmm. One of my mentors called the 30s the decade of the slow death of the junior messiah complex. You know, so when you're 29, it's like, I'm going to go save the world, right? And by 39, it's like, I'm tired of trying to do that.
So. Yeah, you've sort of gotten it beaten out of you. You've tried some things. Some things work, some things didn't, but you definitely get to the end of yourself where you're like, okay, I don't know that I'm going to accomplish even everything that I thought a decade ago was possible. I think part of what you do is you bring remedy to this area of meaning and purpose that most people have no idea how to pursue. They have no idea how to think about this part of their life because we're kind of trained to think about it in terms of a career. We're taught to go to school, go to college, pick a major, get really skilled at something. That'll help you earn money. And if you earn money, that will bring you a sense of meaning and purpose. And you know that's a great lie. I mean, when you go into these processes with people, I know sometimes you get stuck and you can't go forward with somebody because they're hanging on to the dream of maybe money or reputation or fame. And that's tied up in their expectation of what meaning and purpose will look like. But it doesn't always look like that. What do you do for somebody who's feeling like their meaning is attached to money, success, fame? How do you help them work through that to see a greater meaning in life?
Well, it has to be self-discovered. So you ask questions. You don't dictate or tell. That typically does not move someone in the theory of change, human change behavior towards what they really desire and long for. So there's a process. There's proven process that I have learned to trust in excavating truth in someone's story and life. If they're willing to sort of bring that truth to life and feel safe enough to talk to me about what's really going on in their interior world and life, holistically, not just vocationally. So when we talk about life, meaning, and purpose, we must look at life holistically. In America, we typically think of my life purpose primarily attached to my career, my occupation. And yet when you look at and begin to excavate what the human heart longs for and desires, it includes that for sure. But it's much larger and bigger than that. I don't even like the term work-life balance, for example. It's a misnomer. It implies equal weightedness. We need healthy life integration for the season of life I'm in. And that includes my vocation, but it includes my personal health and life, my family dynamics. It includes my sense of spiritual community, if I have one, and then the community at large beyond that. It must be integrated.
Yeah. So a lot of people listening, I know it's all ages. There's probably a lot of those in their 30s to 40s because Rebecca and I are in our 40s and they've gone through the warrior years. They're now in those tired years, right? Raising children, raising family. I know in Rebecca's journey in her 30s, you know, raising a family felt like full time. I can't even imagine what else I can do with my imagination or time because I'm running to Target. I'm cleaning up after my kids. And I know a lot of women will feel that pressure, but then there can be this freedom that starts to come when you realize, wait, there's more for me. So talk a little bit about the people you've met with, almost 1,000 people going through these life plans. I want our listeners to better understand what you've encountered with people when they're coming in, they're in their 30s or their 40s, they're trying to figure this out. What are the points that push people to go, I need to go invest 2 or 3 days of my life into trying to rediscover who I am?
Well, the journey of life itself has inherent transition or inflection points, turning points embedded in it, just like in the 6 Hebrew stages of life. So independent of our own personal story, there are built-in transitions that kind of jolt us, change the status quo, create change internally, externally around us, that prompt us to ask, what am I really about? What does meaningful, purposeful living look like for me? How do I contribute? How do I give back to my world? Add to that your own individual unique story with its own surprising events that can create some degree of tilt or turn. So typically people reach out to me and the Patterson Center when they're in a turning point. Turning points create some degree of confusion or create some degree of a lack of clarity. I used to know what I was about, where to leverage my time and my talent and my investment of energy, and I don't know anymore. A turning point feels like climate change, the weather shifting, and I'm not sure what all that means for me. And so I need help. I need guidance.
Right. I remember when I wrote Take Inventory, the first chapter of the book, I mentioned you, Pete, and how you had me answer those questions. What's right? What's wrong? What's confused? And what's missing? And I've had actually a lot of messages from people who are doing this now, who are reading the book and they're trying to take inventory and they're getting stumped on the what's confused question. And I'm so glad that you talked about that a little bit more. It's a shift. It could be expected or unexpected. A door might be closing or a door might be opening, and there's some confusion on how to navigate that. Is that a decision we should make and move toward, or are there lots of opportunities and we're not really sure how to discern the right one? But I do remember going through this process with you, and there was this like map out your life, you know, the highs and the lows on a scale of 1 to 10. And if something was close to a 10 or down close to a 1, those were trajectory shifting moments, whether they were full of grief or full of joy. But those are the things that help us navigate a life. And I loved that you started this process with us having to go inward and go, what are the markers? And so is that what you would recommend anyone who's in that season of confusion, how to navigate that?
Yeah, I think there's important sort of existential questions we have to wrestle with, we have to engage. That four helpful list, what's right, wrong, confused, missing, that's a where am I now question. And even the confusion part of that, we don't have to necessarily answer, but at least flush out into a question, what is confused, so that we can wrestle with it and engage it. The other important existential question to engage is, how did I get to where I'm at? And those are the inflection points. That's my backstory. And every human story has its peaks and valleys, if we were to put them kind of in a lifeline graph, right? And what we learn from the human journey and story is typically our greatest times of growth come after the deepest valleys. It's how we view loss, suffering, setback. Viktor Frankl has a great philosophical, even theology built around, as a psychiatrist, built around the opportunity embedded in suffering and loss. And
right.
So we learn these types of things when we make our backstory, our one-of-a-kind life journey backstory, visible. And we learn from how we got to where we are now.
Right.
And so that's a part of the perspective pause and season of getting clear, not just of where I am, but where I want to go, is learning from our personal history.
I'll never forget walking into that room, Ace Hotel, where we were all meeting, and you had me hooked because in the first 5 minutes, you introduced me to Frankl, who I now have read so much of his work and has influenced and shaped even my understanding of our emotional health that's attached to meaning. And you quoted Frankl saying, "Life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but by lack of meaning and purpose." So whatever we find ourselves in, the situation, we want to blame that situation, but truly it's more of this internal meter of, do we have meaning in our own lives? And as we know, Frankl describes meaning in three areas: our work, our love, and our bravery and suffering. And so as you just noted, that pain that we're walking through, are we going to be brave? Can that pain become purpose? And how do we begin to navigate that? How many people would you say that you've met with that they come to you, they're hurting. There might be confusion, but there's also maybe burnout or loss. You get into the heart stuff with them, right?
Like deep.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth sets you free. And it does if you see it and own it and responsibly steward it. But every human story has its some degree of pain. There, I have yet to meet a person whose backstory did not take some hits. And it's why the human heart loves the collision between good and evil, or the antagonist and protagonist. Every human story has that same dynamic unfolding in it.
Pete, thank you for helping us think well about this. I know it's a lot. There's a lot more we could talk about. You've devoted your life to helping people, and you do that through your work at the Patterson Center. Will you just describe a little bit about the Patterson Center and what that is and where people can go if they want to learn more about this kind of conversation?
Patterson Center is named in honor of Tom Patterson. Tom just passed a month ago at age 94. Tom is the brain behind the ATM pin technology, for example. He designed Space Mountain at Disneyland. He was just a brilliant contributor to the world of technology.
Wow.
But he had a lot of personal loss, lost four kids, and out of that loss, conceived, authored the original life plan process and took me through it, as I said, in 92. So we at the Patterson Center, we have over 600 certified facilitators who guide people through. It's typically for an individual, a two-day one-on-one deep dive into life. And for couples, it's a three-day experience. And so you can, if you're interested and curious and want more information, PattersonCenter.com with one T. Tom said, I asked Tom once, why not two T's? And he said, oh, we lost the T back in Scotland to save ink. So PattersonCenter.com. And that's our sense of calling and contribution to the world, is to help other people discover and live.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but what a legacy he has left. You and 600 others who are now taking people through this process. We send people almost annually to do something like this, even in our community, always referring, always recommending, because we see how powerful it's been in our own life. So thank you for your leadership and just taking this forward.
Thank you guys for the friendship and this time together.
I hope this was helpful for you, no matter what age you are, what season you are. We all need clarity and direction as we pursue a life of meaning. And so we reference that a lot with Frankl's work, and that life's not made unbearable by circumstances, but by lack of meaning and purpose. And so Pete's helping a lot of us define and put language around what's meaningful to us. And that's what I try to tackle so much in the Connect Rhythm of Rhythms of Renewal, because if we can't recover our passion or learn how to dream again or learn something new, take a class, then we might get lost in doing the same thing year after year. And so we need a plumb line, something to forge ahead as we find greater clarity in our purpose.
Yeah, and Pete, he's just the absolute best. But there's other friends in your life, people who maybe known you for two decades, that know who you are, that can help you process some of these things. Rebecca writes about this in the book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. She talks about taking inventory. She uses these questions, creates a grid. When you order the book, you can go in and actually get a free download guide just to walk through this inventory process that we learned from Pete Richardson. And so we want to give that to you because we want you to live in the kind of freedom and purpose that Pete describes, that he's walked almost 1,000 people through how to discover. And the more we're living on purpose, man, we're coming at life from a place of strength, not from a place of weakness. And so that's what we want for you. The book's available everywhere books are sold. The audiobook, a lot of people are buying the ebook and audiobook. So listen to Rebecca, read the book, and then leave a review for this podcast. Do a book review on Amazon. Let's keep spreading this message and inviting more and more people into this. As we head into this holiday season, it's going to be a great time for people to stop, to reflect, to ask some of these bigger questions. And what better time to do that with a friend than now? As always, we want to make available to you a free 30-minute session with a certified coach to help you think through your life, think through the areas where maybe you're having a struggle or you need some of that professional input. And you can get that through our tribe by texting the word RENEW to the number 555-888.
Special thanks to Ryan O'Neill with Sleeping at Last for providing the music for season 1.